That was the favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. And yes, we are back, ladies and gentlemen, after an hour and 15 minutes of the powers that be trying to keep the PES off the air. It did not happen. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop their office in Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday from 9 to 5 and Friday 9 to 1. Speaking Japanese, if you please. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join in the good times at Neil Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners learn about the Japanese culture and speaking and writing from 4:30 to 5:15 p.m. Intermediate students focus on vocabulary from 5:15 to 6 p.m. And advanced classes with one-on-one teaching meets at 5:30 and goes till 6:15 p.m. Contact Kimihirose at 509-432-3903 or the Neal Public Library at 334-3595. Once again, you're listening to KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. Transmitter or not, we are here ready and waiting to talk to you about the wonderful day's events. And one of these wonderful such events was the recent caucus that took place here in Washington, both on the Democrat and the Republican side. I will talk about that real shortly, but in the meantime, we're going to hear one more from the Reverend, the favorite of the PES, the Reverend, Reverend Horton Heat. You are listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You've got Scotty. We missed out on talking with Tom as he had to take off. He has to run up to Spokane and run all over the place. He's having a lot of fun today, and he certainly misses you. We had a great opportunity to chat about a couple things off the air. I wish that we could have done some of the conversations on the air, because there's a couple things I wanted to talk to Tom about, such as the caucuses that just recently happened. And Tom brought up something that he thinks that I should participate in, as I am one of those cold-hearted, cruel, evil conservatives. So anyway, here we are, and we are back on the air. I don't know who tried to keep us off the air, but the saboteur did not succeed in his plans. Here I am. So, the topics for today are sort of being put on hold. Next week, Tom and I will both be off the microphone, as it is President's Weekend. And so we'll be back the week after that. I'll actually be out of town for a whole different reason. And, you know, there's been a lot of things that I've been wanting to talk about over the last, oh gosh, since, you know, before Christmas break. It seems like my list of things to talk about gets longer and longer and longer, because there's always new things that are being put on it that bump some of the older things. And one of the topics one might think I would be commenting on today would be the proposed university district idea. There was an article in both the Daily Evergreen and the Daily News about the idea of it. And I'm going to be one that's going to reserve some comment until the plan comes out in more of a written format and not of a testing the water, see how people feel about it. But just some of the original, you know, just your thoughts, your comments, or your original concepts of it, such as things like, well, if there's a university district, then the university's going to control parts of campus. And Ted Weatherly, I believe, was attributed to bringing this up, and I think it's a very good point that will need to be addressed as part of the written proposal, is the university has been very quick to whitewash things that have happened on campus, even the things that have happened just off of campus that have been related to the university. The university is more than happy and quick to downplay, to cover up, to hide, and I don't think that that's the way of decreasing the number of assaults on campus. You don't decrease the assaults by not reporting them. I mean, sure, that decreases the number of assaults, but have you truly decreased them? No, you've only not reported them. So they're still happening, you just don't tell anybody they did happen. Therefore, when they look at the statistics, oh, look at that, crime is down. No, crime's just not been reported anymore. Different than crime being down. So the transparency of making sure that events that do take place are actually reported to the news. Under former administrations, this whitewashing was going on. I don't know if that's going to be the case with Floyd. I don't know if Floyd is going to... Wow. One of the basketball players just walked by and he almost hit his head on the door. It's incredible. He's huge. Anyway, sorry. Back to what I was talking about. My question is, why is he in the dungeon of Smith Gym way down here in the dark, 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 dark dungeon? I don't know. Anyway, So I'm going to leave the opportunity for Elson Floyd to make his own legacy on reporting of things that could possibly cause a black eye to the university and how he's going to report said things. But I really question whether the university is going to cover up a lot of stuff that's been happening in order to make themselves look better. I wonder if the question is that they already acknowledge that the university police department can't cover that area, so they're going to have to hire more officers. Is that a good idea? I mean, the university has admitted, yeah, we're willing to take on a huge financial burden to take care of this because we probably have deeper pockets than the city does. The city's trying to take care of these urban-type problems with a rural city-type budget, and the university might have deeper pockets. So university is talking about expanding its police department in order to cover the area up on Greek Row that's bordered by the university district proposed area. I don't know if that's always going to be a good idea. I mean, the bottom line is that the money still comes from the taxpayers. It's just maybe coming from a larger pool of taxpayers when you add the whole entire state of taxpayers that put money towards WSU. And the question is, will it make the area better for students and people living within it? Will the university be able to have greater punishment jurisdiction, I guess you could say? You know, because realistically, the university can both get you on the university level, put you through the university conduct code, plus you can still get criminal problems. So will that give the university that much more freedom to punish students? Some students view it as a double jeopardy, double punishment, because they're getting punished by the school and they're getting punished by the legal system. But I don't think that that's necessarily a true double jeopardy thing, because there's a lot of situations where people can get in trouble with the law and also get in trouble with work or whatever else. And I say work because in a lot of ways being a student is sort of like a full-time job. That's your job. Your job is to get good grades, go to school, study. That's your full-time job for the next 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, how many ever you got left. And that's what you're expected to do. And your behavior does affect you in many arenas. And if your behavior is criminal, it might affect you in the criminal world, and it also might affect you at your work, at your school, so to speak. There are certain things that I could do where I could get in trouble criminally that would affect my work, where I could get in trouble at work due to things I do outside of the bounds of work. Is that fair? Well, I know the rules. I understand. I play by the rules. So if I do something that's criminal and I get in trouble at work, I have what I have coming. I know the rules. I understand what the situation is, you know, and I choose to do things. And that, you know, and it all comes down to that as well, choice. You choose to break the rules or you choose to follow the rules. There's no, oh, I didn't know. No, they're out there. You need to know what they are. And there are certain things that are just common sense. Now, granted, as Guy Smith always said, common sense is being bred out of society. The idea of knowing right and wrong just innately is just gone. I mean, you have to have warning labels on everything. Warning: this coffee from this machine that makes hot water that pours through these granulars of ground up coffee causes the black liquid that comes out to be very hot. And should you get this said hot liquid on your person, it might cause scalding and it might cause burns and it might be painful. But we have to put that on there because some people just might not know that on their own. I mean, does that really tell you something about a certain segment of the population that we have to have such warnings that hot water is hot, that sharp objects can cut? It seems silly, but we have to. There's a segment of the population that pushes that upon us. Common sense is being bred out of society. Nothing that... I'd like to think that we could do something about that. I think it's called natural selection. We just stop putting warning labels on things, and these people will scald themselves to oblivion. They won't be with us anymore. Maybe they'll cut themselves to pieces because they didn't realize that the chainsaw was meant to only cut branches and wood and not your arms and legs. I mean, at what point do we just say, okay, you're just too stupid to function in today's society? Sucks to be you. Natural selection at its best. Here we go. So, anyway, I'll reserve comment on the university district until I see the actual plans. Gut reaction level, though, I'm a little bit wary of it on the gut reaction. But there's definitely some things that could be positive about it, and that's why I think it's important for everybody to not go off the deep end until we figure out what's going on. Now, getting to a totally unrelated subject, but something all the same. There was a project that I undertook recently, and I have to say that I learned a couple things during this project, and maybe I'll share some of these things with everybody, and hopefully other people will learn from my learnings. Now, I can't say that I'm the most handy guy in the world. I'd like to think that I'm a handyman, but I'm not. I bought a house some years ago in Colfax. It had a lot of potential. It had unfinished basement. It had a lot of ability to be fixed up and made into a really nice house. I sold the house a couple years later. It still had a lot of potential. And what I mean is I didn't do anything to make it a better house, really. I did do a few things, but I didn't do them. I had electrical panel installed with all new electrical wires run throughout the house. I had a new gas forced air furnace put in the house and ductwork put in throughout the house. I had it done, but I didn't do it myself. That doesn't make me a handyman. That makes me somebody with pockets that hold money. I had, as a housewarming gift, my family came over and we redid the bathroom, put in ceramic tile, shower, surround floor, new vanity, the whole works there. And that's only because my family, that's their business. So I helped with everything, but I did the grunt work. I didn't really do any of the technical stuff because I didn't really know how. And, you know, why would you do it when you have an expert right there doing it for you anyway? So I just did the grunt work there. So I left the house with pretty much all the potential that I moved into it with. And because of that, I learned something about myself. I don't do potential. So when I was looking for a new house and the real estate agent was like, oh, this place is awesome. It has all this potential. Once she said the word potential, I said, I don't do potential. Let's go somewhere else. Oh, come on. It couldn't be that bad. All you have to do is get a case of beer and a couple friends to come over. You guys could drywall this stuff up in one day. And I'm like, yeah, let's go look at another house. I had that opportunity, that potential before, but I didn't fulfill said potential. But like I said, I like to think myself a handyman. I like to be able to think that I can do some stuff creatively with my hands, using tools and whatnot. So I went ahead and started a little project. And I've had certain tools over time, but I last Christmas I bought myself one of those 18-volt cordless tool sets that has like a skill saw and a jigsaw and a sander and a light and a table, or not a table saw, but a sawzall, the whole works, a reciprocating saw, I guess you'd really call it. And I got the whole entire works, and I've done a couple little projects, but I haven't done anything big yet. And I got a router just for this Christmas. I got a router, and I bought a whole bunch of different bits for it so I could use the router. And I decided to undertake a project, and that project was to build a frame with a glass insert to hold a project that I had made. And I knew I had a certain amount of wood at home that I knew would make a pretty nice frame. So I went out and I bought a large piece of glass at some point along the way. I bought the stain for it and the brushes and got the wood, and first I sat down and I went through and I made plans for it, and I said, okay, what do I want this to look like as my final product? How am I going to have the corners connect to one another? How do I want the corners to look? How do I want to use the router bits in order to get the edges to look? What do I want to do in order that the glass gets held in place, but the project piece can also be put in there? And you know, and I first, like a good handyman would probably do, sat down with the piece of paper and pencil and started drawing out my plans, making measurements, figuring out, okay, how big does it need to be? How big does the frame need to be? And on and on and on. So I did that, made my cuts for the frame, made my angled cuts for the frame using the chop saw. I used the table saw and a new saw blade, and I put a nice deep groove that was a quarter inch down the middle of all the pieces, and put the frame together and made all my measurements to buy the glass. And now this is one of your learning points here. Learning point number one. When I was measuring the piece of glass I needed, I knew I needed the piece of glass that would fit through the frame plus the groove that I made, the handy-dandy groove. I used a good ruler, and I put it in there, and I said, okay, that groove is 1 3/8 of an inch deep. So my opening is 20 inches, and I have the groove that's 1 3/8 inch deep. And my width is 30 inches, and my groove is 1 3/8 inch deep. So there I go. Now I have my 30 by 20 plus the space for the groove. Well, this is the learning point. There's a groove on both sides. There's a groove on the top and the bottom. So really, it's not 1 3/8 of an inch. It's 2 3/4 of an inch. So it's essentially 1 3/8 up top and 1 3/8 down low, down below. So that added a full 2 3/4 inches onto that 20. So it should have been 22 3/4 inches. I ordered the piece of glass 21 3/8. Well, that's a whole heck of a lot short. So now I have this problem that I have this piece of glass that cost about $30. That's just under an inch and a half short on both the width and the height. So then I was back to the drawing board. Here I had the wood all cut out. I had all the angles made. I had all the routing edges all had been completed on it. The groove had been made throughout. Everything was all ready to go, and I got this piece of glass that was too short. And it, to me, the wood was the cheap part. However, I put a lot of time into making all the grooves and making the rounded edges and everything. So then you have to ask yourself, what costs more money? Would it cost more money to buy a new piece of glass at probably about another 30-some-odd bucks? That would be the right size. Or would it be more effective to buy a new piece of wood and remake all those cuts, all the angles, all the router bit corners, and the grooves, and remake all those, realizing that, well, you've done it once, and now you know what you need to do, so it's going to be a faster process the second time through. Or do you retrofit your grooves and your wood, your frame, to fit that piece of glass? Well, I thought through the whole thing a little bit, and I believed there was a way that I could actually retrofit everything and have it work just the way I wanted it to. So I devised a plan, got the necessary wood to retrofit the frame. More or less what I needed to do is my hole that was, or my gap that was 1 3/8 inch, I just needed to fill some of that in so it wasn't quite 1 3/8 inch all the way around anymore. More or less take half of that and fill the rest of it in. So I came up with the cunning plan to do that, and I did it, and it seemed to work really well. So then I had the piece of glass that was going to fit in there nice and snug. It wasn't going to have any play. Then I used some silicone, and I use that to silicone it in there to help hold the glass in place. So it's just an extra piece of security. Now, I learned something there, too, and I'll share this with you. Silicone comes in more than white. It comes in a clear color as well. In the case of putting glass in there, it probably would have been wiser for me to use clear rather than white. I grabbed white. I bought white. I knowingly chose white. And I look back going, why did I choose white? I have no idea now why I chose white, but I chose white. So, and another little piece of advice for everybody. More is not necessarily better. And what I mean by that is, just because you have 15 ounces of caulking in a tube doesn't mean you need to use said 15 ounces of caulking on the project. Now, of course, I didn't use 15 ounces. That would have been way overboard. Even I know that. But I definitely used more caulking than I needed to. And the one thing about the silicone is once it starts getting places, it's like impossible to clean up. It just gets worse and worse and worse. So your best defense to that is just doing it right the first time and not having to try to clean anything up. So putting in a good bead of caulking around there and putting it in there would have been good. But no. I had to go overboard. So I added another second or third bead. So once I put the wood in the glass in there, it started squeezing down. Some of the caulking started to, you know, force itself out and make itself known. So then I had to try to do the cleanup, and that was a pain in the rear end. Would have been a lot easier if I did it right the first time. So what I'm trying to say here is, there's a lot of things you can learn from other people. There's a lot of little lessons that you can learn, and in a lot of cases, if you have the opportunity to listen to somebody else who's done it before, you do so. What I'm sharing with you is little things that I've learned along the way. Now, I probably could have bought a frame. It would have been more expensive than the amount of money that I spent on this one. You know, it might have been a hair nicer, but I think this was a wonderful learning opportunity for me. It was, you know, it was fun to do. I like working with wood. I'd like to think myself, like I said, a handyman. And each project you do, you just get better and better at. But it's still one of those things where in my mind, I imagine what it looks like, and then I look at it in real life. I'm like, well, I'm close. Usually I'm not quite as close as I was on this particular one. So then once I got before I put the glass in there, I actually did spend some time staining it, and I put on about four layers of stain because I wanted to get a nice rich color to it. So overall, the process went pretty well. What I would say is measure once, cut twice. Nope, wrong. Measure twice, cut once. That would have been great with the glass. And I thought I did that. I measured that opening three or four times, but what I didn't continuously do is look at the fact that I had two grooves to put the glass into. Big, powerful information. So when buying a glass for a frame with the inserts, make sure you measure the inserts on both the top and the bottom and the side to the side, not just one of them. Exact costs. Make sure that when you use silicone caulking or bead or whatever, that you put on an appropriate amount. You don't put on too much, but you got to put on enough that it works. Just don't overdo it. And finally, just have fun at the project. And remember, the saw blades are really sharp. Don't try to stop them with your hand. Now, I figured I'd better throw that in there because, you know, hey, we live in a society of people that just don't understand these kinds of things without being told. And there you go. So that was my frame experience. I made the frame, and I think the final product, I think, looks very nice. It's now in use, and I think it worked out really well. I guess we'll get a chance to, you know, see how it holds up over the years. I'm hoping that it holds up very well. Now, the other thing that I found is this snow situation that we've been in. With this melt that we're having, it's interesting. Let me go back a couple years, about a dozen or so. We had a huge snow similar to what we were having this year. And cars on the side of the roads, they were plowed under by the plows. They were snowed under by the snow. There were some cars that I remember some of the fraternities on campus actually as a community service thing, they actually posted information, like they posted flyers and put out information that they were willing to come and dig out cars for people because there were some cars that were so snowed under they weren't going to get out of there for a long time. So the fraternities would send out a group of guys when they got a call from somebody, and they would go and dig the person's car out. And I can see that being the case this year because there's a couple cars even on my road right now that are just horribly plowed in. I don't see them moving for a long time to come. And my road right now is honestly a one-lane road. There is so much snow piled up. I actually have a four-wheeler with a plow blade that I bought when I lived in Colfax because I had a really super long driveway back then. And I use that to plow my driveway, and then I have it now, but I have a really small driveway. And I feel sort of funny when I get out there on a plow plowing my driveway because it takes 10, 20 seconds to plow my whole driveway. I mean, it takes me half hour to shovel it, but a couple seconds to plow it. But it seems sort of funny to have a big, huge plow to plow a small driveway. So I decided that, you know, hey, the sidewalks, some people took good care of the sidewalks in front of their houses and some people did not. And I decided that what I would do is I'd use my plow and I'd hit all the sidewalks all the way around the street and get the snow off the sidewalks and allow, you know, an open sidewalk. Well, that big snow that we had on the Thursday that shut down school, so many people started digging out their driveway and putting the snow in the sidewalk. Made it to the point where I just, even with the plow, it would have taken a lot of time to get through all those and move the snow, and it would have messed other people's driveways up in the process. So I more or less stopped plowing a lot of the roadway and focused on mainly the area by the mailboxes so everybody could use that, and then mainly the stuff around my house. So anyway, we had snow like we did. I remember when I was living in Stevenson and I was walking out to my truck, and I remember walking by a car and I couldn't even tell it was really a car except for the fact that it was just a mound, sort of slightly car-shaped. You could not see anything of the car. You could not see tires. You could not see glass. You could not see metal. It was truly 100% totally snowed under. So I had to remove about 8 inches of snow from my truck just to get into it. I got inside and I went off to work. Well, that snow piled up and piled up and piled up for days on end, weeks on end, and then it got super duper duper cold. I'm talking negative degrees during the hot part of the day, and that lasted for about 2 weeks. And I mean, it was bone chilling cold all day and all night. And it seemed to me it lasted for about a week or two, might have been closer to 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, we hit a hot snap. It went to like 40 degrees, which when you were at negative 10, 40 degrees is one heck of a warm-up. Talking about shorts and t-shirt weather now. So we got about 40, 50 degrees outside, and it's raining. Constant, solid rain. And over a span of about 48 hours, 48 to 60 hours, right in there, all snow, about 18 inches of snow, melted. All of it. So you imagine the whole entire city of Pullman covered in 18 inches of snow, and then in 2 days melt the whole entire thing. The river system, the sewer system, nothing was able to keep up. Flooding started taking hold of Pullman all over the place. As a matter of fact, if I remember, I've been meaning to do this for a while. If I remember to do this, I will try to scan in some of the photos that I have and put them up on the PES website, which is www.thepes.com. If you have any stories back in that time, you can call me in what time we have remaining, 335-2207, or you can reach us on the station's website, www.kzuu.org. This is 90.7 FM KZUU. You're listening to the PES. And I'm reminiscing about the floods from 96. So the snow is about 18 inches deep throughout the whole entire city. The temperatures heated up approximately 50 degrees in a matter of a couple days. So here it is, about 40 degrees outside, and it's raining, and it's a constant rain. So all the snow melts, and I have photos from my room in Stevenson looking across the western side of, looking west to the hillside right above the city playfields. And you can see how it went from white to not white over a matter of 2 days. And you could see the water, the river that flows right behind the city playfields. You can see how that rose and rose and rose and rose. And the university trailer court, that little itty-bitty trailer court that was down there, was flooded out. There's the Al's Body Shop that's down there. There's now that big white building with Dita Auto Repair and a few places like that. At the time, there was different businesses there, but that whole entire area was totally flooded and under. There was a little Honda Civic. And everybody sat there and watched the water raise up on that Civic over time. There was the road that goes right in front of the Dita Auto Repair. There was all these cars parked along the roadway. And at the time, it wasn't parallel parking to the street. It was actually, perpendicular parking. People backed in. And the water was so high that it actually had lifted some of those cars and sort of pushed them all into one another. The whole entire city playfield was underwater. Grand Avenue had water on it. Main Street, the businesses downtown Pullman were starting to flood out. Some of them, such as the old Ken Vogel clothing, the back wall was pretty much the river bank. So once it got to a certain point, it just went into the store. And for a couple years thereafter, he would actually have sales. It was a river runs through it sale. And it was sort of a, you know, commemorating the big flood. And WSU had closed down for the first time in my time at WSU. And the first time, I think, since the Mount St. Helens eruption, which was 16 years earlier. So it had been, you know, four generations of students had gone through the school without a closure until this day. And it wasn't due to too much snow or anything. It was actually due to the flooding. They closed down the school for various reasons. So a lot of the people and the faculty, the students and whatnot, went to Pullman and they went to work. They started sandbagging. They were doing everything they could to help stop the flooding and mitigate the flooding. And sometime after the floods were over with, there was a big appreciation sort of luncheon type thing that was held where a lot of the businesses in the city and everybody got together and bought food and sort of had a big celebration to celebrate all the people who'd come out to help. And during the same period of time, Pullman wasn't the only one hit. Palouse and Colfax were also heavily hit. Colfax also had a problem of there was large ice flows in the river that were threatening to take out bridges. Water was so high. If you've ever been to the Cement River in Colfax down by Rose Hours or by the county courthouse, and you stand there and you look about how deep that is, it's pretty incredibly deep. I would guess 12 to 15 feet high and however wide it is. I was there, and I stood there, and I could easily reach over and touch the water flowing through there at an incredible rate of speed. It was within a foot, less than a foot, of going over the banks by the courthouse. There was that much water flowing through Colfax. And so Colfax had their own share of flooding. And up in Palouse, they had a huge fight because their water supply was threatened. And they almost had flooding into their water supply, which would have ruined the whole water supply for the city. So they had, from what I understood, 10 to 12 feet high of sandbags around the area. And they had pumps working the whole time, pumping whatever water was leaking in out of there in order to protect it. And it was one of those things that it would have been devastating to the city of Palouse if that had broken in, let alone all the flooding that the city had already went through anyway. So you can imagine 18 inches of snow plus 2 days of rain all trying to converge all at one time in the river system we have here just is not a good situation. So this year they were already starting to plan for such an event. They were already starting to plan for this kind of thing happening again. But I would have to say that though we're up in our, you know, late upper 30s, low 40s, we're not getting a ton of rain, so the snow is not melting quite as quickly. And it's been several days, and there's been a fair amount of snow melting, but it's not been to the rate that it was back in 96. So hopefully our river system will be able to handle this because it will be at a much slower rate than before. And with all this melting, for those who haven't been around Pullman for any length of time, you will notice that when we get snow, we don't sand the roads, we gravel the roads because we get a lot of snow usually. And it works out really well when the snow gets compact, you put the gravel on there, it gets pushed in a little bit, now you got pretty much, you know, your own little roadbed, it works out really well. However, the problem is, once that snow goes away, you got slippery rocks. So, it's sort of interesting, it's one of those things where the snow by itself is slippery, the rocks by themselves, when they are on the roadway, they're slippery, but when you add the two together, they make a road with traction. So, right now, what you're going to see a lot of is, you're going to hear a lot of people trying to stop, and they'll be on the rocks, and you'll hear them skidding out. You'll hear people trying to start, and you'll hear them sort of burning out because of the rocks. And the other thing that you're going to see is you're going to get a lot of people with chipped windshields and broken headlights. And let me tell you right now, get those broken headlights fixed, because unless you want to meet up with Officer Friendly, a fixed headlight is a good thing to have. Obviously, for safety reasons in of themselves, it's good to have both headlights working. But if you are going somewhere and you don't want to be inconvenienced with a friendly stop to remind you that your headlight is broken, you might want to, as soon as you find out, fix it right away and get it taken care of. So just a little piece of advice for those who haven't been around when we have the roads graveled as heavily as they currently are. The city, I know, will be working pretty hard and pretty quick about removing some of the rocks, but the problem is that they have tons and tons and tons of snow that also needs to get removed, and that's going to take a matter of, I don't know, weeks, maybe? Depends on how quickly they can get it out of there. They're asking for people to cooperate as much as possible and not park on the streets, park into the driveways, in order to facilitate the removal of the snow. So if you have the opportunity to park somewhere where they can remove the snow easier, it will help both you and their neighbors by doing so. Now, not everybody's going to have that opportunity, especially when you get up on the Greek Row area. And that's another thing that WSU, going back to the WSU proposal, is that WSU police and the facilities would be in charge of that area too, which would mean that snow removal would actually not be done by the city, but it would be done by the school, which I guess you could take that for what it is, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not making a value judgment, I'm just saying how it is. So, the snow we have now reminds me a lot of the snow from 1996, but I just don't think we're going to have the flooding that we did then, unless all of a sudden we get warm and lots of snow or lots of rain right away. And it'll be really interesting. You know, we're having our big thaw, and it's only the 11th of February. Winter is still, you know, in effect, and I could definitely see another round of snow coming and everything like that. But I think most everybody has had their fill of the snow. I think everybody is like, okay, we had our fun in the snow. Let's start warming it up a little bit, get rid of the snow, and get back into normalcy. I'm going to have to drive to the west side this weekend, or not even this weekend, in the next couple days. And I'm just hoping that the passes are such that they're passable and that I can make it over to the other side of the state. Okay, so now I've touched on two subjects, and those are actually sort of some of the newer ones. Some of the subjects I was wanting to get on, they're not in a place where I could easily, quickly access them, but that's okay. One of them is something that happened this summer. It's been that long. It's gone through a whole semester that I've been trying to talk about this, and I just haven't got to it yet. But now is my time. There was a incident that took place at my house. I have a set of wood, essentially two steps going from my house to my patio. And they're just simple wood steps like you might have on a wooden deck. Nothing major about it. And I had my barbecue hamburger patty all pattied out and sauced up and spiced up, and it's all ready to get thrown on the grill. And I was going out to the grill, and I hit that first step, hit the second step, and all of a sudden, boom, I got stung. And I look around, and there's four or five bees just all over the place, and there more of them are coming right from one of the bottom of one of the steps. So I quickly got out of the area and decided I was going to be known as Scotty the Bee Hunter. No bee was going to be safe. I first went in and made a concoction of something using water. And I want to think that I used some baking powder or something like that. Put it on the bee sting. I can't remember what it is. I have to look it up again. And that supposedly helps the sting. Then I drove to the store and I found myself some bee killer. And I came back. And I came around the backside, so they didn't know what they had coming. And I sat there and I waited, and I got down low. And I looked at that little bitty hive, and I said, "Bees, you've seen your final day." And I sprayed that spray, and it went across through the air with little bees here and there coming back to their hive. And it hit that hive, and it got their little paper hive wet. And bees immediately started falling to the ground. And more bees came back looking for their hive, nowhere to be found. And I got them too. Because when you mess with me, you will, if you're a bee, die. And that's just the way things are. So a message to all the bees out there, if you're listening right now, do not build a hive at my house. And if you do, don't you even think about stinging me in my own property, all right? Because I have the right to defend myself. And if you're a member of PETA and you think that what I did was evil and mean and bad, next time I find a beehive, I'll give you a call. And you can come on over and you can take it down and take it home with you. I'll let you keep it. But no beehive is going to be at my house where bees sting me when I'm using my property. Good. I'm glad that's understood. We've heard a couple songs from the favorite of the PES, the Reverend Horton Heat. And, you know, I think we're going to end off with one of those today here pretty quick. But I have to say I'm sort of disappointed I didn't get a chance to talk with Tom a little bit, because there was definitely, well, Toms. There's both Toms out there. I'm sure one of them would have loved to call up and talk about the caucus that just took place. Mike Huckabee was within about a percent and a half of winning Washington. And the race gets called for McCain. And there's definitely a lot of people going, whoa, wait a minute here, guys. This was one of those almost too close to call races, and you're sitting here putting it in favor of McCain. And with all the problems that we had in the 2004 election, one would think that we would definitely be very careful not to have such a problem again. So Tom Forbes, I'm sure, would have a lot to say about that, and it would have been interesting to get his point of view. And my partner, the other Tom Too, we were going to talk a little bit about the caucuses as well, but on a different aspect altogether. And then there was something that we got to talking about that we probably wouldn't have brought up if we had not been off the air like we had been. But my goal is next time we're on the air in 2 weeks that we'll have the opportunity to talk about that and give everybody a chance to listen in on it. Because there's a pretty neat story about the whole entire... It's a pretty neat story about the whole entire thing. And realistically, what Tom was saying, and I'm hoping that he's not listening in right now so he doesn't hear what I'm saying, because I played dumb with him when he was telling me about it. And, you know, that's something typically I do all the time is play dumb and sort of take the devil's advocate role. So I was doing just that with Tom. And it would be very interesting to get his point of view to see when I really... tell him that I do said thing with the said company that we're not going to talk about right now in the air. So anyway, once again, you're listening to PSKZUU 90.7 FM.